Meeting is now being recorded.
Good day, everyone. This is Brenda speaking. Welcome to RDS Who Is To Plenary Call Number 34 on 16 July 2018 at 1500 UTC. Attending the call today is Alan, Dimitri, Volker, Lily, Susan, Stephanie, Carlton, and Catherine. We have no observers at this time. From ICANN.org, we have Alice, Brenda, Lisa, Jean-Baptiste, Amy, and Trang. Apologies from Erica and Thomas. I'd like to remind everyone today's call is being recorded. Please state your name before speaking. And Alan, I'll turn the call over to you. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Are there any changes to statements of interest?
Yes, Alan. This is Volker speaking for the record. Just to announce that Keydrive SA, which is my employer, has been acquired by the CentralNIC Group, so that's industry consolidation that has recently occurred. It's still set to close, but obviously there's probably nothing stopping this rolling train at this stage, so I wanted to update that.
Thank you very much. I trust you're staying on with them, as far as we know anyway.
Sure.
Thank you very much. We'll note that, and going on to no more other statements of interest, we will go on to the first item on our agenda, and that is subgroup status update. And I believe I will turn this over to Lisa.
Thanks, Alan. Excuse me. This is Lisa Pfeiffer for the transcript. With the meeting materials that Jean-Baptiste sent out for today's plenary, you'll note that there were two documents attached, a subgroup report assessment tool and a recommendation assessment tool. The subgroup report, I think it was gap assessment tool, actually, Jean-Baptiste, can I ask you to actually display this on screen while I'm speaking, starting with the subgroup report tool?
Sure, we'll do.
Thank you. So the subgroup report gap assessment tool, it is intended to be a tool to help us identify where our subgroup reports still need some work to flesh out subjects that weren't fully addressed or in some cases simply move text that was provided in the subgroup report to the appropriate subsection in the full review draft report. So you'll see in this assessment tool, it's broken down by subsection from our template, and tries to call out the items that are expected to be in each of those subsections, and then whether they are provided, that would be the check mark, whether they're provided but simply in probably in the wrong section of the subgroup report, that's the M for moving the text, and then a U indicates that there is text, but the text is actively being updated by the subgroup. So rather than say that the text is done, it indicates a U, knowing that it's being changed. Any place where you see a blank cell in this table, it means that I could not locate that material in the subgroup report. And so possibly it's there, and you'll just need to call that to our attention, or it's text that needs to be still crafted in order to completely fill out the sections that we'd envisioned for each of the subgroups. In this report, in this gap assessment tool, there's also a couple of tables, a table starting on page 2 and then page 3 of additional comments that came up during the review of the subgroup report. So in the case where text is missing it, the comments may provide some guidance as to what might be helpful to flesh out the missing material. So that's one tool that we have available to us to help bring all subgroup reports up to the same level of completeness and a similar organization. You'll see at the bottom of this table, there's a section that says for review team to answer. And this we intend to be a tool for our face-to-face where we can discuss a particular subgroup's output and then determine the level of consensus that we might have within the group and sort of an overall feeling of whether the section is clear enough, whether it's concise enough, that means short enough, and also whether additional edits are expected. We may flesh that out a little bit more between now and the face-to-face, but the idea is that these are questions we should ask ourselves as we go through the subgroup sections in our face-to-face. Switching now, Jean-Baptiste, if you could display the other tool. The second tool that was attached to the plenary materials is intended to let us assess the recommendations themselves. So not all subgroup reports, of course, have recommendations. But for those that do, the recommendations are listed in this table. And again, breaking down each of the recommendations into the material that is expected to be presented as part of each recommendation, those are not necessarily separate. They don't necessarily all have separate titles, if you will, in the recommendation, but the recommendation is expected to answer all the questions that are shown in the left-hand column of this tool. And then what you see in the cells here are, you know, my take looking at the recommendations in their current form as to whether all those questions were answered. Some of these may be fairly simple for subgroups to add a few sentences to address, and some may require you to discuss the questions further as a subgroup to come to the face-to-face with answers. Again, at the bottom of this table, there's a section for the review team to answer, and this would be the kinds of questions that we're going to try to answer when we get to the face-to-face meeting. Again, do we have consensus, what is the level of consensus on the recommendation? Is it specific enough? Is it measurable? Is it achievable? Is it time-bound? So these are the questions that our terms of reference ask us to address for each recommendation, and this is intended as a tool to help us sort of organize our thinking as we get to our face-to-face meeting. So I think what we're hoping is that each of the subgroups will take a look at their portions of these two tools and where there are gaps, perceived gaps, in either the subgroup report or in specific recommendations that subgroup put forward, that you make an attempt to try to fill those gaps between now and the face-to-face meeting. And if I perceived a gap that you don't, all you'll need to do is call out where you believe the text is that I missed. But this will help us have a really solid basis for our face-to-face meeting, or at least we hope it will. And I think I turn it back to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. And what is our next? Sorry, I need to go back to the plenary call. All right, the next item is our current subgroup status. I'll note in passing, I forgot to ask at the beginning, is there any other business? And in fact, I have two items that I meant to add, and I put them in the chat. One is timeline adjustment, and the second is a who is one gap analysis, implementation gap analysis. And before we go on to the next item, which I think I'll turn back to Lisa, that is the subgroup status update, Susan has a question.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lisa. I think these tools are really helpful, and I'll go through my report based on where I have check marks or need things done. But on the second, I think it was on the second slide, on the impact, I just struggled with knowing how to, answer that. And I was wondering if you had any hints for that.
Thanks, Susan. So you're asking about the part of the recommendation where it asks for the impact of the recommendation?
Yes.
So that is envisioned to be what is the what impact would carrying out the recommendation have? You know, which parties would be positively affected should the recommendation be adopted and implemented, and what would the impact be if the recommendation is not implemented? So that was the original thinking. I believe that many people, when they filled out that section, talked about which parties would actually be sort of carrying out the implementation. And that question is to be answered, but it that alone is not the impact. The idea is to give some guidance to, well, ultimately the board, I suppose, of, you know, why is it important to adopt this recommendation and implement it, and what would the consequence be if the recommendation wasn't implemented. Does that help?
Yeah, that does help, because I think I was in the first group where it was like, okay, well, you know, the registrars would have to do this, or ICANN would have to do this. Okay, that makes more sense to me. Thank you.
Yeah, the impact of not doing it, it's Alan speaking, impact of not doing it should probably be listed as a separate section, because I don't think that's implicit from the title. So we may have some bit of adjustment to do there. I note Erica is now with us, although she probably cannot speak at the moment, but that makes us a pretty full call. And next item on the agenda is the subgroup status, and go into the substantive part of the of our discussion on trying to move forward on some of these groups. And I'll turn it back to Lisa to lead it and tell us which section we're going to look at first.
Thank you, Alan. Lisa, again, for the transcript. Just before we move into the first subgroup to discuss today, we have slide 6 of the plenary material on screen now, and that is the table of all the subgroups and their statuses. This table has not actually changed since our last plenary call. There was a subgroup meeting of law enforcement last week where they did make some progress on getting the survey ready to actually launch. But I did not see any other subgroups talking on their lists or putting forward an updated draft of the subgroup report. So just calling to your attention that this is our last week pretty much before our face-to-face week. So hopefully we can get a little bit more active this week. We're going to try to do that in part during today's call by focusing on a couple of the subgroups. So with that, let me go to slide 7.
Yeah, before we do that, Lisa, it's Alan. I'll note one of the few green tick marks in the last column is mine on outreach. And during the presentation in Panama, I realized that the slide said for outreach it was fully implemented. Clearly it wasn't, because at the very least the outreach component had not been done. And in discussing with Lisa just before this meeting, we realized there is no real place in our subgroup drafts that it says, was it done or was it not done? You know, a nice concise green tick mark or red X, effectively, or maybe a orange X. And so that, I think, for all of the reports, we're going to have to go back and make sure that it does have a definitive answer. And Lisa had a suggestion for where that could be. So I think even the green tick marks may have to be slightly adjusted because of that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Alan. My suggestion for that belonged in the report is actually in the last subsection of each subgroup output is the section on recommendations. And my suggestion was that that subsection begin with a paragraph that states, just as we did for the ICANN 62 slides, states was the recommendation fully, partially, or not implemented. And then for some subgroups, that would continue on to the list of recommendations. For other subgroups, that might just bring us to a sentence that says there are no further recommendations needed at this time. So it would be a concluding sentence. We can pre-populate the review team's draft report with the statements to that effect from the ICANN 62 slides, and then, of course, you all can adjust that based on your continuing discussion. In Alan's case, of course, Alan, you would revise that from fully to partially implemented and explain why.
Yeah. All right, back to you.
So moving then to slide 7, I believe the first subgroup that we picked to discuss today is the subgroup looking at privacy and proxy services, recommendation 10. And the text that Jean-Baptiste included in the slide deck today is actually the text from the ICANN 62 slides. But this is intended to provide a foundation for this subgroup to present where it is and solicit any feedback both from subgroup members and from the full review team. And Volker, since we have you, can I ask you to talk us through the next couple of slides?
Sorry, I hadn't been able to prepare because of certain internal issues that had to be dealt with last week, which also do with the change of my table of interest, of course. So I'm a bit underprepared for this, but I can, of course, detail what we have here. I mean, nothing has changed since we last met at ICANN. We haven't had any subgroups meetings, and also the frequency of emails on the list has been close to zero, so no discussion of substantive content has taken place. I would say that everything that we presented at ICANN still stands at this point with no new developments.
Volker, it's Alan. Two questions. Number one, can we talk a little bit about whether we should call this fully implemented or not in light of the question that was raised during the meeting of specifically if it isn't implemented, how can we say fully implemented? There's a subtle question of was the recommendation implemented or was privacy proxy implemented? And that, I think, is the distinction. The second thing is, can you give us some idea of where the contention points still are, if there are any, and sort of address how we're going to clear them up?
It's a good question. I think the recommendation in itself was fully implemented, as the required board action and community actions have already taken place, and we're currently, while it's still the implementation phase of the working group's results, does not reflect on the implementation of the original recommendation by the board or by the community. Although there is a certain argument that would be able to say that full implementation would only be seen once the accreditation program is up and running. But I would personally, I wouldn't see it that way. As far as the contention points, there is still a debate of whether we should recommend certain rights of ICANN to conduct compliance action. However, I think we can resolve that at the face-to-face. Other than that, I think, if I remember correctly, there wasn't much contention about the piece here.
Thank you. On the fully implemented, we probably want to make sure we note carefully that we understand the difference between the implementation or effectively implementation squared, and just make it clear that we're doing this knowingly, not by accident. Stephanie has her hand up, please. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks, Alan. Stephanie, for the record. And thank you, Volker. I haven't been following this IRT lately, but the last time I checked in, I became deeply concerned that the prices that ICANN had in mind were going to literally price the proxy services out of the market, in which case we would have a successful operation, but the patient died, if you follow me. We've accredited them. We've gone through the process. It's all fine. Tick the box. But if nobody's going to be offering these services anymore because they're too expensive, then we have achieved a policy outcome that might make some people happy. So I wonder if, A, has there been movement on that? Have we seen a drop in prices? And, B, if not, can we make a note that until we see affordable services accredited and on the market, we can't really completely tick the box? Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. Yes, that is something that we are addressing in as part of the issues that we have found with the recommendation. However, that is, as this is still a moving process, it's very hard for us to comment at this stage because there's no real data of how this will turn out. I've spoken to Cyrus and Akram at the last ICANN meeting, and they promised they will look into the pricing again. However, they restated that they are figuring these prices are based on the cost recovery principle, and there wouldn't be much room for reductions. And as to the question who should bear those costs, they would look into that again as well. But as far as I know, there has been no movement on that. And in fact, the working group has not met. The IRT working has not met since the ICANN meeting either, so we're still waiting on the legal review that ICANN is conducting, and I assume that during that legal review they will also revisit the pricing issue, but no movement has been recorded on that issue as of this time.
Thank you, Volker. Stephanie, any follow-up?
Just to say, Stephanie, for the record, that until my fears have been allayed, I think we should just put a marker in on that, that it may be that the services have become unaffordable. Thanks.
Thank you. Lily, please go ahead.
Okay, maybe for the record. Actually, I raised the concern before in the mailing list, the data accuracy issue that's regarding the domains utilized PNP service. So the accuracy will be dealt by this subgroup. But from this, the draft report and the presentations during the I-1062, I didn't see the accuracy topic has been dealt by this subgroup.
Volker, do you have a comment on that? I do, but I'd like you to answer first if you have something.
I mean, we have addressed this issue in general when we looked at whether the PDP working group has implemented the previous recommendation, and data accuracy has been part of the debate of the working group. In fact, the recommendations of the working group include recommendations that all obligations that a registrar has with regard to data accuracy would also apply to a privacy proxy service provider in case that accuracy check has not, the verification or validation has not already occurred on the registrar level. So basically, privacy proxy, all registrations under privacy proxy services are required to have the same verification and validation steps undertaken that registration without these services have to undergo.
Thank you. And Volker, that was in the recommendations of the privacy proxy working group?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. And, you know, clearly from an ICANN point of view, the registrant is the privacy proxy service, so I'm glad that was done. Was there any suggestion during that PDP, however, on how any verification could be done? Because clearly only the privacy proxy service has access to that data in normal circumstances.
Based on the various models of how these proxy services and privacy services operate, this has been discussed, but no viable solution that would not also cause violation of the service itself has been presented, so that was not included in any recommendations.
Okay, so that could be a note. I'm not sure we're in a position to make a recommendation, but we certainly could note it.
Agreed.
All right. I was just going to make a comment on the cost issue. When we talk about pricing out of the market, what we're really saying, I think, is that for small operators, it's going to be far too attractive to go under the table and not admit you're a privacy proxy service than to pay the fees, unless the fees are highly graduated to reflect the fact that a small operation does not have the same wherewithal to pay the fees as a large one does. Is there currently discussion in the privacy proxy implementation group on graduated fees, or is it heavily front-loaded because of the cost to ICANN to actually do the verification?
This is the pricing of the model is entirely ICANN-driven. The ICANN has presented its pricing, then taken about half a year to justify that pricing. Essentially, ICANN is charging privacy proxy service provider the exact same amount that they are charging registrar annually and for accreditation without the variable fees. So there's no per domain or per contact fee, but the basic fee remains the same as it is for registrars. And there has been significant pushback on these fees, but ICANN has not budged an inch, just pointing out again and again that this is on a cost recovery basis and that the money would have to come from somewhere.
Yeah, I can see the costs to ICANN on the initial accreditation. I'm not quite sure what the costs are on an annual basis to ICANN.
Neither are we.
Okay. Thank you. We have several hands up, but I think they're all old at this point. And at this point, Volker, are you feeling comfortable with going into the face-to-face meeting without a work group report in the work group meeting in the interim?
I think that's the reality of the situation that we have to deal with. But I think there is not that many questions still open, so I think we would be able to do it like that. I would still recommend every sub-team member to just have another brief look over the recommendations of the initial working group, just make sure that everybody's memory of these is fresh so that we can have a substantive discussion that moves quickly out of rather than having to look up every single point again and again. I think that's something I have on my schedule as well, to just be properly prepared for this.
Thank you. We have a queue of Lisa, Susan, and Lily. Lisa, please go ahead.
Thank you, Al. I would like to have a plan to address Lily's concern, whether that is Lily suggesting some text for the subgroup report or a plan to talk through her concerns and how that affects the report, because I'm afraid if we we continue to have the issue raised, but then no plan to take the next step, we're not going to resolve it. The other reason I put up my hand is, Volker, to ask you to take a look at the report gap assessment tool, and you'll see that there were a couple of things that I couldn't find in your subgroup report that perhaps you could include in your final update. One was that the issues that are enumerated, they don't seem to tie back to the analysis very clearly. And if you take a look at it yourself and see if there's some way to tie those things together so that the reader doesn't just read the analysis and then see a sort of disjoint set of issues, but rather sees a flow of your thinking, I think that would improve this section. And then the other thing is that there was no identification of impacted groups for each of the issues you identified, and that's probably a pretty easy fix to the text that you have already in draft form. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lily, please, unless Volker has a comment. I'm sorry, Susan next.
Thanks, Alan. Susan Kawaguchi for the record. Back to the discussion on the implement, you know, is this fully implemented or not? I think I have to back off about at this point because, A, you know, we did get the comments and the questions in the session, but also, you know, if we look at this, you know, let's just pick one that's centralized, who is Lookup, for example. If that had just been agreed upon by the board and ICANN-ORG was instructed to do it, but hadn't done it, I don't think we would have agreed that that was implemented fully. So I think we just need to provide stages of implementation, which is basically what everybody else was talking about too, but I wanted to make sure that we weren't so bold as to put fully implemented, but, you know, it is on the road to implementation or something, and what is implemented. On the pricing, that recommendation also suggested incentives. So if, you know, when we actually publish our report, if the pricing part has not been resolved, I would suggest that we encourage ICANN to provide incentives to the bodies being that are requesting accreditation. So maybe they start out with a lower price or, you know, after a year and good behavior and doing what they're supposed to do, they get, you know, a refund back on their accreditation fee, something. And because that is part of the original recommendation. And then on the other point on data accuracy, I copied in to the chat the language from the PPSAI final report about accuracy and the proxy privacy customer information is held to the same standards as the registrant information is the way I read the report, and that was the intention when we drafted that section. So I don't know if that fulfills Lily's concerns or not.
Thank you, Susan. Lily?
This is Lily for the record. I just want to respond to Susan's comments in the chat. I know that the validation and the verification also pertains to PNP service. But in the data accuracy subgroup, we review the background materials. I found that for the WHOIS AIS project, when we encounter WHOIS data is relating to a PNP service, the ticket was closed at the first place. It didn't even go to the registrar. So actually there is no check whether the PNP service provider did the validation or verification. So I also echo Carton's comment in the chat that actually this is regarding the compliance action.
That's anyone it. Have a comment on that? I do, but I'm not the most best expert on it, so if anyone else would like to comment.
Well, just that GDPR has taken care of equalizing the playing field on that as well, because the checks for the accuracy on whether these checks have been performed or not is also a bit more difficult under the GDPR with the redacted rules for registrations that do not have these services. So basically, the non-privacy proxy registrations have come to the same level that is expected for the privacy proxy service accreditation. So I think the recommendation of the working group still stands, and with the GDPR in place.
Volker, can you speak up? People are saying they can't hear you.
The difference has been become a lot smaller under the GDPR, I think. So I see no reason to treat privacy proxy service providers worse than normal registrars in this respect.
Volker, can I ask a question? Because now I'm confused. I thought there was absolutely no way that ICANN can do any level of verification on the real registrant data, not the registrant of record, which is the privacy proxy service, but the beneficial registrant. My understanding was there was no way we could unveil the real user to do that verification other than to trust the privacy proxy service. Am I missing something? Have we lost Volker?
Sorry, I was on mute there. Sorry. Yeah, I'm just saying that it's going to be similar to what will be the new status quo under the GDPR for non-privacy proxy registrations. Yes?
Yeah, no, I was going to say on GDPR, it is conceivable, it may not be the rule today, but it's conceivable that ICANN itself, to be able to do accuracy checks, could have the access to the full WHOIS record. Whereas with privacy proxy, I don't believe that option is there. That's the difference.
I would agree to that. I would agree that that is the case, but I don't see any workable solutions to that issue that wouldn't violate the trust of the privacy proxy registration's beneficiaries. And with checks again for accuracy from compliance with regards to normal registrations, there is a certain element of how do you best say that? There has to be some indication that there is inaccuracy in the WHOIS, and that triggers the verification and validation. Whereas with the privacy proxy service provider, that indication of inaccuracy is already missing, so that wouldn't the trigger that usually triggers WHOIS inaccuracy action by ICANN is already missing.
Okay, so I think what you're saying is I didn't miss anything, that there really is no way that ICANN can penetrate that and do anything resembling an accuracy check on the beneficial registrant for a privacy proxy service. So.
Well, is one method, as in, I mean, we have processes for reveal and relay of underlying information where there are parties that have legitimate interests in obtaining that data. And once that data is being revealed or relayed to that party, then, of course, inaccuracies would become plain to see, and that could then trigger a compliance action. So I would say for those records that where a reveal or a relay of the data has occurred, then that could also lead into a compliance action. But that's,
yeah, but,
of course, a lot less than what's available for other registrations.
Yeah, no, okay. So I think we're all agreeing that there really is no way to do accuracy checks in the general case. You know, yes, if a UDRP was filed, suddenly you have the ability, but that's a pretty rare case. Susan, please go ahead. And I think we have to move on soon to the next item.
I think the intent of the wording in the PPSAI report was that the vendor or provider takes that responsibility on so that when it is revealed that it is actual information. And, you know, my anecdotal experience, it's about 50-50. You know, you get junk, which is obviously not even, words sometimes, and then you get actual information, and and then I've dealt with that directly with the provider, but I've also sent that into ICANN and said, look, this is what I've got, and I didn't get much of a help or response there. But I mean, Lily's right, and I was misunderstanding her points of view. So I'll write up something and put that into the compliance report, and then we can talk about it in Brussels.
I certainly think, it's Alan speaking, we could certainly make a recommendation over and above what is in the privacy proxy, and do it either under compliance or privacy proxy, that if there is a reveal and it is demonstrably not accurate, and you said perhaps half of them that come out of UDRPs or URSs look like that, that compliance must take action in those cases.
No, it had nothing to do with URSs or UDRPs.
Okay, well,
it had
any
to do
reveal.
With simple reveals. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. In any case, if it becomes obvious, it shouldn't be up to you to submit a compliance report at that point, I would think. I think there's enough evidence that compliance could simply step in when those come up. So maybe we want to consider a recommendation like that in one place or another. Lisa, back to you then. Let's go on to the next item.
Thank you, Alan. So just pointing out that Volker's, to sum us up here on privacy proxy, Volker's request that all subgroup members take one last look at the subgroup report and identify any action or issues they may have with the current text. And then, Volker, you have an action to address those along with any gaps in that subgroup report and get it back to the full review team. I would like to ask that that happens by the end of this week so that we can prepare a full report for the review team to review in its entirety in advance of next week's face-to-face. I realize that everyone has many other things on their plate, but I'd like to suggest that be the target. Moving on then, the next topic we had identified was Recommendation 11, the Common Interface section. And Jean-Baptiste, if I could ask you to advance the slides. There you go. And again, this subgroup report was presented at ICANN 62 by you, Volker, and there were no specific questions raised on common interface, I think, other than there was a question someone asked about what happens when the domain that's the subject of a query is internationalized, and are there some blank fields in the response being returned in the common interface, if I recall correctly. Volker, is there anything else that you can flag for us as remaining open issue for the common interface? I know that the recommendation text itself might need to be solidified.
Yes, I think we mainly only need to do just a bit of cleanup on the language of our current points. I don't think there's anything content left to debate, so I think we're in a good place here if we can just snap the language and make sure that we dot all the I's and cross all the T's.
I see Susan has her hand up.
So since the advent of GDPR, the enforcement of GDPR, I've used the common interface a lot to look up who is. And finding, and I've probably got four different instances where registrars have timed ICANN out and are not allowing lookups. And so then I brought this up at the ICANN meeting in Panama, and it's ICANN staff came to me and said, this is a big problem we have. But I haven't been able to delve it, haven't had the time to delve into this further. So we should, I can send those to the subgroup, the screenshot showing, you know, the responses I've gotten. And I think we should note that there may be an issue with registrars fulfilling their terms of the RAA to provide, you know, access by ICANN.org or through ICANN.org, really is how it works. Because if they're blocking ICANN's access, then who else are they going to block? So it's a problem.
So, Susan, if I could ask you to take the action to suggest how you think that should be reflected in the common interface by sending an email to the subgroup list?
Yeah, I'll do that along with the screenshot.
Good, thank you. And Volker, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, just to respond to Susan, I mean, when we are blocking access to WHOIS records to ICANN, this is not intended to block ICANN from these records, but rather block the tool that ICANN has provided to the rest of the world to provide WHOIS access to full data. So basically, we are complying with the temporary spec, and that applies to everyone, including ICANN. Because if ICANN is providing a WHOIS service to the rest of the world, we cannot just go ahead and say we are blanking off the WHOIS, but if ICANN displays the WHOIS, then you get the full experience. That's not how the GDPR works.
No, this has nothing to do with GDPR. I mean, you can get records from redacted records. I see records all the time. You know, I've probably looked up 200 to 300 records on the common interface. And just in the last month, and you know, you get the redacted GDPR compliant records. This is not returning any results. It, just because GDPR exists doesn't mean that a registrar doesn't have a responsibility to provide a record, even if all they do is limit it to, you know, generated data and registrar and registry data. They still have to provide a record. So it has nothing to do with that at all. It has to do with not allowing the lookup to go through ICANN to the registrar. And what's happened now, and maybe this was going on all along and I just hadn't been using their lookup tool, is the what we thought was a fully implemented recommendation is now reverting to not being a fully implemented recommendation. Because if not all registrars comply with this, then and return some sort of record, they can't time ICANN out and block them, then that's not fully implementable or implemented. So it has nothing to do with GDPR. It has to do with access.
So I think you're talking about rate limitations that certain registrars have implemented, right? Where
exactly.
If you get a number, if you get percentage of the requests, yeah, that certain registrars do that to prevent harvesting of the data, which was also, of course, a problem, to be honest. Probably should be a less of a problem now, so I should probably talk to these registrars, but I think that's something that we identified pretty early on in our review, that ICANN does not actually track these metrics of when a registration record is not displayed because of certain rate limitations. And I think we reflected that in our recommendations as well, that these this data be tracked in the future and therefore may lead to a better quality of service.
Yeah, I agree, but I think we should just because it seems to be a growing problem, and that's according to the just a brief conversation I had with somebody internally at ICANN. So that if
that would
we
be
make
information. Would you share
yeah,
some
it would
information
be,
regarding that?
If I get it, if I get more, I will. Yeah, I just haven't had time to follow up.
I know that, and that would be interesting indeed. That. If this actually is on the increase, I wouldn't see any justification for that. So, yeah, that would be interesting to see more information.
Okay. I'll see what I can dig up.
Yeah, it's Alan. I can certainly confirm that, you know, on one of my domains, when I go to the registrar, I see completely different information than when I go to the WHOIS portal. So we have a problem. And I suspect it has only happened recently. I don't think we can ignore it. Go ahead.
That may be an issue of who the registry, the ICANN portal is querying. If it's a thick registry and the ICANN portal is only querying the registry, as they expect the data from their previous edition to be there, then they will get a different result than if they would be querying the registrar. That now has to output certain other information as well under the temporary spec. So as the obligations under the temporary spec have changed, there may be a difference between what the registrar and the registry is outputting, and the ICANN portal, I believe, is still programmed pre-GDPR that it relies on the registry. So it depends on the TLD and whom the portal is querying. So that may be an issue as well. But that is also probably a GDPR issue, and we had previously said that we would exclude those. But if that is a growing problem, then we might reverse that decision on this point.
You may well be right in this case, and I haven't checked the registry, what the registry produces. So, nevertheless, if we're in a situation where the WHOIS portal, the ICANN WHOIS portal, which we are saying should be the one people rely on, is not working, then we have a problem. So, but you're right, under how different groups have implemented GDPR, we may well have an interesting situation that for a thick domain, we may have different answers coming from different people. All right, back to you. I think we seem to be finished the queue on this one, so back to you, Lisa.
Thank you, Alan. So just to recap, just as with Recommendation 10, for Recommendation 11, the Common Interface Subgroup, members are asked to send any remaining concerns they have to the list. That includes the action Susan took to reflect the discussion we just had about timeouts, and then Volker to incorporate any final changes into that draft and to get it out to the full review team. I note in the chat, Volker said that the end of the week was difficult for him. I do have a general concern. It doesn't apply just to these two subgroups. A general concern that we do need a target by which all subgroups will have the text they want to be folded into the full draft report, you know, clearly made available to us so we can go ahead and get ready for the face-to-face meeting. Alan, I don't know if you have any guidance as to what that sort of drop-dead date should be?
Well, one of the questions is, we're scheduled to have a meeting on Monday. If we're still going to go ahead with that meeting, then clearly there are going to be substantive things happening then. On the other hand, I presume you're getting on a plane on Tuesday. I don't know how early or late in the day that is. We've got to allow you at least some time to integrate the stuff that we're doing. Do you have pretty much all of Tuesday, or do you leave early on Tuesday?
I leave early on Tuesday. It takes me 2 days to get to Brussels.
No comment. clearly there's going to be some changes that get made on Monday if we're having a meeting, and I hope we are, or at least I believe we are. I would say we really need things to go to Lisa no later than Sunday, other than things that are happening on Monday. So that gives you the weekend. I can't see anything later than that. I'm saying this without Lisa having asked Lisa ahead of time. Does that sound reasonable or not? But if some of us try to get our stuff to Lisa well before the end of the week, then hopefully she can integrate the ones that only show up on the weekend. Lisa, am I putting you in an awkward position?
I think you're reflecting reality. I do want to have the full draft out to the review team so that as everyone travels, they can have a read through it so we don't walk into the face-to-face having that be the first time we look at the full report. So we'll do our best to integrate what we have by the end of Sunday into the full draft for the review team. And I'll say that we'll try to have that full draft pulled together by the end of my day Monday.
Okay. Where are we in the agenda? Sorry, my Adobe Connect either disappeared or froze. So.
All right, we are now moving on to recommendation 3, outreach, Alan.
All right. Okay,
so
I can.
We're now on slide 13.
Okay, I will talk to that one even if I can't see it right now. And if someone else could handle the queue, please, until I can get back in, or at least get it back live. That one was fully complete. As I noted during the presentation, prior to the presentation, I noted that the slides had fully implemented. At that point, I said, well, we can't really call it fully implemented because the outreach part wasn't done. So I think we have to qualify it for that. And on further reconsideration, we're also saying, yes, ICANN.org implemented a whole bunch of new stuff, but did not try to coordinate it with the things that were already on the web. So I'm tempted at this point, and we can certainly discuss it more at the face-to-face, but I'm tempted to lower the implementation to partially implement it, even for the provide documentation part. And I think that can be justified based on the further recommendation we're making. Although the further recommendation says don't do it until we know what's happening with GDPR, just because it's not worth doing on an interim basis now, it could well have been done 4 or 5 years ago if they had looked at it in a different way. So my inclination is to change the big green tick to something that's much more partial than we originally had. Other than the verbiage that goes along with that, I believe the report is stable, and we haven't had any comments on it in a long time. And open the... All right, my Adobe Connect now seems to sort of be working again, and I see no hands. And now I see a hand from Lisa, though, so go ahead.
Thank you, Alan. Alan, I would ask that you take a look at the gap assessment tool, both for the subgroup section and also for the recommendation.
Okay.
There are a few items you could flesh out in the recommendation itself. And then there's just a little bit of rationale missing from, at least on my read, from the section 4 where you identify the issues.
I will do that.
Have a look at that. Great.
In my copious free time, I will do that. And next item, which I think is also mine.
It is. Safeguarding registrant data, slide
okay.
15.
Safeguarding registrant data. The report was sent to the whole plenary. I do not believe there have been any comments. And miraculously, I see from Lisa's gap assessment, there are ticks in every box. So unless I hear comments, and of course subject to a final review at the face-to-face, I think that one is complete. And where are we? We are now finished the item on subgroup status. We have a discussion of the face-to-face meeting, and I will turn that over to, I'm guessing, Alice.
Alan, before we move forward.
Okay, go ahead, Lisa.
Just one more item related to subgroups, and that is I believe we have two subgroups that are going to try to have a call this week. I wondered where we stood on organizing those calls. That was recommendation two, the single who is policy, and then the compliance group. So let's start. I know we have Carlton. So that would be the single who is.
It's Alan. Is there some reason that we haven't already sent out a doodle on them if we decided to have a meeting?
This is Brenda, and doodles have been sent out for Lily's subgroup, which is Rec 1516, and a doodle, an updated doodle was just sent out this morning for Carlton's subgroup. And I'm waiting for Susan's availability so I can send a doodle out on that one. So check your email, folks. There's information to get these subgroups.
So there are three that we have or will soon have doodles on.
Correct.
Good. Thank you. Lisa, back to you if you're not finished.
That was it, Alan. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Compliance. Where do we stand with compliance?
I think she said she's waiting for Susan's availability.
That is
thank
correct.
You. You listen better than I.
Every once in a while. All right, back to whoever's talking about the face-to-face.
Hi, Alan. This is Alice. Thank you. I hope you can hear me okay.
We can. I can.
Okay, good. all right, so the agenda was circulated to the list earlier today. I'm not sure if everyone's had a chance to scan through it. But essentially, it's at the same location. We've got the same sort of arrangement. So the breakfast is served at the office, and then you'll have lunch at the office. And then you'll have a dinner on the first evening. So we've sort of mapped out the agenda using the draft report and some of the sections that require additional discussion and so on. So you'll see that and I hope the agenda, yes, you can all see the agenda on the screen. So we'll start with a welcome where we will talk about day one objectives, opening remarks, and also give a refresher on work plan and an update on gap assessments, assuming that, progress will be made in terms of filling out some of the sections that require further work. And then we'll talk about the draft report, give you a short overview of what's currently in the draft report, what's been drafted already. The leaders have received the current draft report in its form. The background section is more or less final, so we're just waiting for Alan, Susan, and Catherine to get back to us on that one. But we'll share with the full group the draft report as soon as we've got a green light from our chairs. And then the first item will be to actually approve the background section, which you think will be pretty straightforward. And then we dive into the content discussions with anything new, and the report from Stephanie, strategic priority with Catherine, law enforcement needs with Catherine again, and compliance with Susan, followed by data accuracy with Lily. And then Volker will talk about privacy proxy services, and we'll end the day with safeguarding registrant data, common interface, and a wrap-up. So this is what we have for day one. Day two, we will start with Lily's presentation on plan and annual reports, recommendations 15-16, followed by Carlton with single who is policy. And then after the break, we'll talk about consumer trust. Trust of Erica, and we've got a little parking lot here for any items from day one or the morning session that requires further discussion. After lunch, we'll have the outreach report from Alan, followed by the IDN report. Dimitri is on holiday during the face-to-face meeting, so we'll need to determine who will deliver that, who will drive that agenda item. So this is still the TBD. And we suggested Lily there, but it's a suggestion only, and I'll be up to the group to decide. And then as soon as we end all the subgroup discussions, we'll have a brainstorming on content of the executive summary. As the executive summary, as you know, is one of the key sections in the review team report. And we'll discuss the structure of the report, see where adjustments need to be made. It may be that you will decide that some of the sections need to be merged or some of the information reshuffled. So this is something we'll have a good sense of as soon as we've gone through all the subgroup findings and recommendations. And then we have a little parking lot again for some of the items that require further discussions, and we'll end our face-to-face meeting with a detailed roadmap to the draft report, so we'll set all the deadlines for completing the outstanding action items. We'll have pen holders assigned to some of the actions, and similarly to the second review team, we'll take some agenda time to clearly confirm the approved recommendations, findings, and action items from the meeting. And then, per usual, we'll end with any other business and some of the closing remarks from the leadership. So this is the suggested agenda, and looking forward to hearing any thoughts, feedback that anyone may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. I have two comments. The first one is I think we really need to allocate some time for looking at the timeline going forward. We previously talked, we have a little bit of flexibility since we're now going to extend the public comment past ICANN 63. I think we need to firm up the timeline going forward, and I think that probably should be done at this meeting. So we should probably allow at least 15-20 minutes for that somewhere.
Okay.
My other comment is we had previously talked about, and obviously that should be near the end, not at the beginning. We had previously talked about possibly starting Friday earlier. I'm happy to leave the time as it is right now if we can change it on the Thursday. And I don't know in terms of access to the office, delivery of breakfast, and things like that. Is it going to be possible to change the start time for Friday on Thursday, or is that something we have to do ahead of time if we want to do it at all?
We're going to work with a new catering company, so I don't know to what extent they'll be flexible, but I can check and get back to you on that, Alan.
Okay. I'd certainly be willing to start with an 8 o'clock meeting start, if that's going to help us, if we need the time. I prefer not to do it unless we need it, but, obviously that's geared off whether we can make that change at the last moment or not.
I'll find out for you.
I'm assuming everyone is local except for, everyone is in the hotel except for Catherine, and she said she could make an earlier start if necessary. So the catering is really the only thing we have to verify on. We can make a final decision at their meeting next week, though. Any other comments on the face-to-face agenda? I must admit, I'm intrigued by the watermark on it, where the watermark is behind the printing except for one section where it's in front of the printing. One of the sections where it's not transparent is what the problem is.
Alan, this is Alice again. Before we close this agenda, I mean, can we decide who's going to drive the IDN?
Oh, sorry, that was my third point. I'll do that.
Okay, great.
I'm on that sub team, so I don't mind doing that one. Anything further on the face-to-face meeting? then we'll go on to any other business. I added two items to any of the business. One is the timeline adjustment that I just mentioned. We already know we are going to hold the public comment later. I would suggest there's no need to make formal changes to the timeline unless Alice has already done it. But if it hasn't already been done, I would say just leave the timeline as it is currently written. And in Brussels, we will adjust both, confirm both the fact that the comment will end later than we originally planned, and obviously we'll defer other items in the delivery of the final report, and we will firm up exactly when the public comment will be issued and when we expect the report to be, the final report, the draft, rather, report to be issued at the face-to-face. So unless there's any comment, we'll note it has to be adjusted, but not bother doing it right now. I don't think anyone is watching it on a minute-by-minute basis. And the other thing is it's dawned on me as we're going forward that the ICANN org evaluation of implementation was green tick marks everywhere. We are clearly not having green tick marks everywhere, and I wonder to what extent, number one, do we want to do a summary somewhere in the draft report of the comparison between where we see the implementation and where ICANN org did? And second of all, do we want to make, perhaps we want to think about making a recommendation, and I would guess it's to ATRT, ATRT3, to make a recommendation to that ICANN formally, after the issuance of a review team analysis such as ours, that they formally look at the gap analysis and try to understand why there was such a difference. Anyone have any thoughts on either of those, on that item? Not something we need to discuss now, but I think it's something we want to think about and perhaps go forward with. I find it rather problematic that every review team has green tick marks everywhere, and certainly my experience on the last review team I sat on and on this one is the review team does not view it that way. And I think that overall concept needs to be addressed. Any comments from anyone? Seeing nothing, then I will ask Jean-Baptiste to review confirm decisions reached and action items.
Thank you very much, Alan. And starting with the decisions reached, we have one for reporters to send all final subgroup reports to be incorporated into the draft review team report by Sunday, 22nd July, end of day UTC. We have Alan to drive the IDN section at the face-to-face meeting. In terms of action items, Volker will update his statements of interest. For the gap assessment tools, all reporters have an action item to review the assessment tools and attempt to fill any gaps this week to be included in each subgroup's final report to be submitted by Sunday, 22nd July, end of day. On Recommendation 10, Proxy Privacy Services, subgroup members are invited to take a last look at the subgroup report and submit comments via email or confirm they agree with the subgroup draft as is. Volker to address any concerns raised in a final draft to be sent to the full review team by the end of this week. On Recommendation 11, Common Interface Subgroup, members of the subgroup are invited to review the subgroup report and submit comments via email or confirm they agree with the subgroup draft as is. Susan to propose edits to address increase in common interface timeouts since GDPR. And finally, Volker to address any concerns raised in the final draft to be sent to the full review team by the end of this week. For Recommendation 3 or 3 subgroup, Alan will update the subgroup report to fill gaps. And finally, on the face-to-face meeting, ICANN org will check whether catering delivery can be advanced for the meeting to start at 8 a.m. and also to allocate enough time to discuss the timeline on the agenda.
Any further comment before we adjourn? Then I will see you on subgroup meetings that happen this week, and we'll meet again next Monday at the same time. And have a good and productive week for everyone. Bye-bye.